Greetings, gallant gamers, to yet another episode of the Daily Days Podcast, the show that adores everything retro but still respects the modern day. I'm Mr. Picario, your humble host on this wandering journey, a trip indeed that seems increasingly endless as our stores, our shelves, our digital archives continue to be overrun with constant content. You know, waves and waves of games releasing every week, more than we know what to do with. I call it the gaming glut, and while having access to endless titles doesn't seem like such a bad proposition, sometimes one can have too much of a good thing. Days, I'm talking the 8 and 16-bit eras, games were almost a rarity. Part of the problem was simply being a kid, of course, with limited resources to regularly procure that next coveted title, many of which could cost $50 or more. Indeed, stores weren't lacking in games to sell necessarily, but those games were largely expensive gambles. Without the internet and a 24-hour news cycle constantly drip-feeding us updates on the latest and greatest releases, we had maybe a magazine or two to guide our way, and often literally those two or three tiny screenshots adorning the back of a cryptic games box. As I can personally attest, getting stuck with a terrible game after being snookered by a game's front and back cover art was common occurrence in those days. The trials and tribulations of growing up, one might say. Thus, many of us stuck with the safest picks, the tried and true faves everyone knew and loved. The Marios, the Zeldas, the Mega Mans, and Castlevanias. Many great and or worthy titles, from Little Samson to Battle of the Olympus to the Guardian Legend, if we're talking NES games anyway, got sadly overlooked because of this. But as poor cash-strapped kids, we really couldn't be blamed for limiting our risks as much as possible. So in other words, gamers of the era rarely, if ever, had too many games to play. But that began to change in the 32-bit age, namely with the Sony PlayStation. No longer dependent on expensive cartridges, games could now be pressed to discs, CDs that cost pennies rather than dollars. Thus, two amazing developments occurred. First, games began falling in price, oftentimes down even to the $20 range. And second, the number of games hitting retail drastically exploded. To illustrate, the official Super Nintendo US library sits at 721 games. The PlayStation, though? Around 1300. And jumping ahead another generation, the PS2's overall library hovers at 1850. And that's just one system. The GBA adds more than 1,000 more, the GameCube about 658, and the original Xbox 864. Now obviously, some of these titles are cross-platform, but the point remains, gamers weren't lacking in gaming options. If anything, they were already getting borderline overwhelmed with endless choice, and this was 20 years ago. But compared to how things are today, gaming in the early 2000s seems downright quaint and manageable by comparison. Thank you. let's enter the modern era in which games are everywhere. Not to mention countless forms of other entertainment, from streaming shows and movies to cable television to podcasts and music services, all vying for our attention. This is that gaming glut I mentioned before, the phenomenon in which so many games and other media are pouring out non-stop on a weekly basis, most are rendered meaningless, even moot, within minutes. All these games become like spare change in our pockets, occasionally dumped into a jar and promptly forgotten. Heck, Microsoft delivers games practically for pennies with its Game Pass platform, in which, for 10 bucks a month, depending on the plan, over 100 quality, often big-budget titles can be accessed and played indefinitely. Sony has a similar service with its PS Now initiative. Both companies also award free, often prestigious games every month through their respective online services, Xbox Live and PSN. Even Nintendo is getting on the act, offering a slew of Nintendo and Super Nintendo titles through its own online network. Then there's Steam, a digital repository of thousands and thousands and thousands of games, many of which can be had for cheap through the company's many seasonal sales. GOG.com, known by many as Good Old Games, offers its own huge catalog of classic and modern titles, many of which can be also had for a few bucks, or sometimes even free during its occasional promotions. The Epic Store is the same way, actually giving away free critically acclaimed games just to draw greater numbers to its site. And how can I forget the mobile platforms, iOS and Android, which offer their own cornucopias of gaming treasures that are probably too numerous to ever be properly cataloged? Apple even offers its Apple Arcade service, in which for a paltry $5 a month, gamers can play another large and curated collection of gems until their heart's content. Indeed, the madness is never really over. Limited Run Games and its contemporaries, like Strictly Limited Games, offer new releases on a weekly basis. PlayAsia offers a flood of juicy import titles. Mini consoles like the TurboGrafx-16 Mini offer a huge selection of games in one instant, reasonable and digestible package. New handhelds like the Arduboy and Evercade offer their own wares. Websites like Atari Age and Pixel Heart to offer a bevy of amazing homebrew and indie titles, and scattered across the internet itself is a swath of incredible fan-made games, like the highly recommended Sonic Robo Blast 2 and the Metroid 2 remake AM2R. These games are free and can't entertain for hours, rivaling even their big-budget official contemporaries. And speaking of those hours and hours, games like World of Warcraft, MapleStory, Fortnite, and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds can consume days, if not weeks and months, of a person's life, again any one of these single games. Like I said, a glut of games. More games than the world has ever seen. More games than can properly be documented, let alone reviewed, which is why even the big sites like IGN ignores most of the smaller fare. Yep, according to Metacritic, 31 games have been released on the PS4 since June 22nd. That's just 8 days ago as I write and record this podcast. And of this number, only 2 games have an aggregate score listed. This means that even the professional establishment can't hope to keep up with the glowing glut and clutter of modern gaming. So, okay, there are certainly worse things in life than having too many games to play or media to consume in general. But it does seem like a ridiculous outcome of our hyper-ravenous, always-connected consumerist culture. And why, sometimes, I kind of wish I were a kid again, savoring that alone game I knew I'd have to ration and stretch until, months later, I finally found another worthy title to take its place. And my money. But with so many games now free, or going literally for a penny on the Switch's eShop just to get noticed over the hordes of other releases, we're definitely living in a surreal, interesting time. An age my younger self would never believe. Whether this is all good or bad is up to you, but I can't help but wonder. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I'm off to whittle down that 300-plus gaming backlog of mine. Until next time, then, this is Mr. Picario, signing off for now.